This is Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
Introducing the world's heavyweight champion, the Crusher!
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
And welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. It's Crushing the Con Man, and we're your weekly source for performance information. Listen, if you want to get in touch with us with any questions, comments, or smart remarks, or if you have an idea or a topic you'd like us to investigate or look into, let us know. Go to our website, crushperformance.com, to the contact page, and drop us a line. We answer all of our emails for sure. And if we like your topic, we may dedicate a segment, even an entire episode, to your topic. So let us know if you have any ideas out there. And if you are on Twitter, our handle is at Jeff Crush, and on the Facebook, it is Crush Performance. Go there and get hooked up with the world of human performance. Today, we continue our look back at some of the great conversations we had in 2017, and there were some doozies for sure, as we continually look for ways to help you reach your potential. And if you're familiar with the show, you will know that in our performance programs, we have a hierarchy, a priority list, so to speak, when it comes to maximizing human performance. And it goes exactly like this with no exceptions. Rest, recovery, regeneration, and in their sleep, priority number one, far and beyond. It's the first factor we consider when we develop our performance programs. Number two, nutrition and hydration. Number three, posture and setup, especially for our athletes. And then for our athletic programs, number four would be movement. How do we make our athletes better movers? This exact model can be cut and pasted into a business model, a school model, a learning model, because it is human development. That's what it's all about. And the parallels across every area of expertise are fascinating. And one of the top priorities in every single program should be sleep. And in September, we went deep into the current sleep science with renowned sleep researcher Sherry Ma from the University of California, San Francisco. Sherry Ma, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, this has been a conversation I've been looking for, forward to for quite some time. Sherry, in our programs, in our developmental programs, doesn't matter whether we're working with the little duffers in developmental sport or whether it's our elite world-class athletes, we have a hierarchy of priorities when it comes to our developmental programs. And the top priority is rest and recovery, and inside of that is sleep. And when I initially tell our athletes or organizations that that's our number one priority and this is our mindset moving forward, I kind of get these crazy looks, Sherry, and I just get the feeling still, even today, that people don't quite really understand or appreciate the power of sleep. And of course, that's your expertise. So thanks for joining us again today.
No, I'm glad to be on. Yeah, unfortunately, sleep is one of the first things that sometimes we all sacrifice and overlook, especially when there's a lot on our plate. But it is incredibly important that we have our daily foundational sleep for proper recovery and ultimately performance.
So we say in our programs, look, here's our priorities: sleep, eat, and play. It's great work if you can get it. There's no question about it. But sleep being the number one priority. We've had athletes, you know, who are, you know, in college or working jobs or developmental athletes or trying to make ends meet. And you're absolutely right. The first thing we hear is, hey, well, I'll just wake up an hour earlier or 2 hours earlier to get my workout in, and then I'll go on my day. And that's just a real, real backwards mindset based on what we know about the sleep and the power of sleep and human performance today. Don't you agree?
I agree. And it's difficult, right? We only have 24 hours in our day, and we all are very busy trying to get in everything that we want in that limited amount of time. And then when you're asking athletes to get, you know, well, the minimum that is recommended is 7 hours for every healthy adult. But for a lot of the elite athletes, we really are recommending more in the range of 8 to 10 hours, which is often far from what many of them are getting. But when you're trying to request a third of that day to be spent sleeping, I recognize that that can be very much a challenge. But for the athletes that are really trying to be at the top of their game, we know that this is really necessary, and physiologically they need that recovery time, as well as cognitively, to be able to perform appropriately and at their best the following day.
Sherry, the power of sleep goes well beyond sport, but when we look at the science and the impact on human performance, there is no place better than professional sports because everything counts. You, of course, are currently a sleep advisor for the Nike Performance Council. You've worked with teams in the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, and Major League Baseball as well. And that's a really interesting audience to get your hands on because you can really sort of see the impact. But it goes well beyond sport, there's no question about it. What are some of the big mistakes or challenges you're seeing at the professional level of sport, Sherry?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think every sport really has its unique challenges. You know, the NBA schedule is quite different than, say, the NFL schedule, but there's also similarities across sport. I think that just generally speaking, athletes and teams, you know, this is a newer area for many of them that they haven't really dived into as much as potentially other aspects of sports performance. But I think one of the big challenges is the day-to-day schedule as when they're at home as well as when they're traveling. And then some of the ways in which they prioritize how they look at sleep and recovery over a season. And then there's, you know, kind of the lifestyle behavior modifications that is difficult as well. You know, when you have alcohol and caffeine, either pre or post game, you have other lifestyle variables. There's the vets potentially with kids. And then you throw in circadian disruption with a lot of travel and crossing these time zones. And all of that kind of lends to this perfect storm that makes it often difficult for athletes to get good quality sleep as well as adequate duration. Like both of those are both critical components.
Yeah, and that's interesting. We're talking with Sherry Ma. Sherry is a clinical and transitional research fellow at the University of California in San Francisco. Sherry's work looks at the impact of sleep on cognitive and physical performance across a wide range of sports. And of course, beyond sport, we know that it impacts every part of our lives, Sherry. Hey, let's go back to really sort of maybe explaining to our audience the value of sleep. And I think one of the great examples of this, Sherry, was the unbelievable work you guys did over at Stanford with the sleep extension studies. You know, when I was back with the Blue Jays, I really did recognize the impact of crossing those time zones on performance. And, you know, I looked at things like having the team invest in personalized pillows for the guys. And I was talking about, you know, sort of the bed top covers, those feather covers, so the guys would have at least some kind of consistent feel on the beds from hotel to hotel. So we were looking at those things. But I'm telling you what, you guys really, really opened my eyes to the power of sleep when you released the information on the sleep extension studies. What a fantastic experiment that must have been to be part of.
Thanks. Yeah, that was actually some of our first work, just really exploring kind of the second half of the story, right? A lot of the literature has focused on the detrimental effects of when we chronically don't get enough sleep. And then we build up what we call an accumulated sleep debt, right? And I was really fascinated as well, how can we pay back that sleep debt? What is the length that's going to take and how much extra sleep do you need to get to really make a big dent and bring that down to a more manageable level? Because that was what we were anticipating would be where athletes really would be performing at their best. And had an awesome opportunity to work with phenomenal collegiate athletes at Stanford. So worked with the men's basketball team, and we really tried to push them to extend their sleep, really trying to set them on a regular sleep schedule, bring down that sleep debt over a number of weeks, and monitor specific outcomes. So for them, we did look at reaction time. We looked at sport-specific measures. So we looked at free throws and three-point shots and an agility sprint. We looked at mood levels, so fatigue and vigor levels. And over the course of a number of weeks, we did see some surprising findings that I did not anticipate we would see a 9% increase in both free and three-point percentages. They started to run faster sprints, and we did see improvements in their fatigue levels. And that was just really sort of when the light bulb went off in my head to say that, you know, there may be a way that we can enhance daytime functioning and ultimately performance if we're really focused in on how these athletes are in terms of their day-to-day recovery and sleep, both, again, the quality and the quantity.
Sherry, such powerful numbers. The increases you saw in those athletes, is remarkable. Those are elite athletes. And, you know, we were looking at the data when I first saw it, and I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I believe they were averaging 6 to 7 hours of sleep, and the extension study required them to be in bed for 10-plus hours for 5 to 6 weeks. I believe that's how it went down. And the impact, of course, was incredible. So just fascinating, I guess, data that really highlighted the value of sleep in terms of human performance.
Exactly. Right. And there is a difference between objectively how much you're sleeping and then subjectively how much they thought they were getting. We did this during the regular season. So, did they get 10 hours every single day? It didn't happen, especially when they were traveling, and a couple of the scenarios where it was difficult because they're juggling being a regular student athlete. But really, that was the goal over that 5 to 7 week period. And we did significantly increase that total duration to try and, like I said, bring down that accumulated debt that we often, kind of accumulates as we chronically don't get enough sleep. So that was really one of the first ones that we thought was quite fascinating to see the physical manifestation of trying to optimize sleep over multiple weeks, and kind of have moved on from there and looking at other sports and different durations. One of my most, the latest one was, we were looking this at sleep extension, what we're terming more like sleep loading. So a shorter period of even just 5 days with professional baseball players, and looking at how does that potentially impact, say, response time or cognitive processing speed, since we know those are critical to how an athlete will perform on the field. And have started to see some preliminary findings that suggest that even a shorter duration of sleep extension, or what we're terming as sleep loading, may provide some benefit as well.
Oh, Sherry Ma, I'm telling you, I really dig the idea of sleep loading. I totally get it, and I absolutely love it. Now, imagine this type of a strategy for an event sort of oriented athlete, somebody maybe like a tennis player going into the U.S. Open, or we have the Olympics coming up this offseason, or you know, take right now, the NHL is right now, and I want to get to this a bit later, but the NHL now has their opening games in China. I mean, that's a... Boy, oh boy, that's an interesting thing. So let's get to that sleep loading. I really like the idea of this, Sherry. So we're talking about, maybe you're looking at a major event. I mean, I would suggest that perhaps maybe a musician could use this type of an approach for a major performance, or a student may use this type of a strategy leading up to exams, because this goes well beyond sport.
Exactly, and that's really how we initially constructed it, where we were saying, okay, if you have a major event, regardless if, yes, potentially you're an elite athlete, that's who we're studying it in, but exactly, it could potentially translate to other high-performing industries or jobs, where if you have, you know, say a couple of days or a week leading up into the event, what can we do to try and maximize your performance? We chose 5 days in the idea that it would be less than a week. If you had an event, say, on Saturday, then what could you do Monday to Friday? Or in the context of baseball, you know, you're a pitcher, what can you do 5 days before you're going to pitch next, right? And we really liked trying to look at a more practical, shorter-term intervention that we thought may still provide some benefit. So that was sort of our hypothesis. And then we started to tackle specific cognitive processes that we thought were going to be critical for these elite athletes.
Oh, Sherry, listen.
And so when you think about it, yeah, I'm going to throw it in there too. When you think about kind of sleep loading, it kind of came from this idea of, like, you know, carb loading prior to an event, right? And so we were trying to think about sleep as a possible short-term intervention too, that, yes, chronically, that is probably foundationally most important, that should be prioritized, whether you're an elite athlete or even a working professional. But in the interim before that important event, maybe there are some shorter term interventions that could be quite beneficial. But to be determined, we're still working on this, but we do think that there's some preliminary data that suggests that there could be some benefits to sleep loading.
Yeah, I think we can make some pretty good predictions of how this is going to turn out. I think it's going to be fantastic. Hey, Sherry, when you talked about your sleep loading protocols, were there a set number of hours, or did you guys look at percentages over the course of the day? But if we looked at that 5-day program, what was sort of the protocols you guys were looking at?
So with the sleep loading, we were trying to have a set sleep and wake schedule. That is very important for the body clock. We were really trying to have athletes also extend their sleep by going to bed earlier. We were keeping the wake-up time the same for a number of reasons. It's better to kind of keep that wake time locked in, and it seems to be a little bit easier for athletes to extend their sleep by going to bed a little bit earlier. We were aiming to get also to extend sleep by a couple of hours. This was done during a training camp, so also a little bit difficult from the scheduling perspective. Mm-hmm. But we were able to get athletes to extend their sleep by about an hour. And so it wasn't like 3 hours more than they were typically getting, but it suggests that even a shorter amount of an additional hour over the course of those 5 days could potentially provide some benefit.
No, it certainly makes sense. We're talking with Sherry Ma. Sherry's a clinical and transitional research fellow at the University of California in San Francisco. Sherry's worked with professional teams like the Golden State Warriors, the San Jose Sharks, Pittsburgh Steelers, teams like the Toronto Blue Jays, and it goes on and on. She's currently the sleep expertise on the Nike Performance Council. Sherry, let's go back to the conversation of sleep debt. I'm telling you, I have it. I think just about everybody I know has it. Hey, listen. I guess there's maybe mixed reviews on sleep debt. Can we actually pay it back? What's sort of the mindset right now in terms of sleep science in the sleep science world?
Mm-hmm. I am an advocate that we can pay this back. That's what most of my research has tried to focus on and trying to demonstrate that there is an ability to pay back some of this debt that we accumulate. So maybe I'll take a step back. So our bodies require a certain amount of sleep every night. And there is variability. So, you know, I feel pretty terrible on 7 hours of sleep. I feel a lot more rejuvenated and refreshed on 8 to 9 hours. So there is going to be individual differences. But the very minimum that is the current recommendation for every healthy adult is 7 hours to prevent health risks and performance decrements. Again, I mentioned previously, elite athletes were really more recommending the range of 8 to 10 hours, 10 plus in there. Just because potentially the need for additional recovery time. But now when you don't meet your what we call individual sleep requirement each day, then it builds up like a debt and that accumulates over time. And so you're right. Most of us do walk around with a sizable sleep debt and don't recognize that that is what can affect things like your reaction time, your cognition, your learning and memory. This is what can affect immune function and your mood and physiology and your appetite. And the list unfortunately goes on. But once we have this accumulated sleep debt, we do suspect that we can pay this back, but it takes more than just one night or one weekend to make a significant dent. And unfortunately, a lot of us really don't allow us the opportunity over multiple days, multiple weeks to be able to really reduce down that sleep debt. Sometimes just take that one Saturday to sleep in. And unfortunately that doesn't seem to be sufficient.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. And I'm part of that too. You know, I do my best for sure. Hey, Sherry, what are the role of naps when we talk about repaying that sleep debt or just, you know, getting that recommended amount of sleep?
Mm-hmm. No, naps can be great. I view naps as this additional boost in your day, that it shouldn't be there to replace adequate sleep at night, because the goal really should be consolidated sleep through the whole night. And then really naps just as this additional boost. And for a lot of my athletes, I'm really only recommending them take about a 20 to 30 minute power nap in the afternoon if needed to give you a little bit of a boost in alertness and performance temporarily. Say, for example, like a pregame nap, we'll time that appropriately so that it'll be right before they have to go out onto the field. It'll give them a little bit more. But naps really are not supposed to replace that 8 hours, 9 hours at nighttime. I mean, if anything, sometimes naps can have a negative effect, especially if athletes, I'm sure you've seen it very well, hour, 2 hour, 3 hour power naps. They're not even power naps. That's like long naps in the afternoon. Those can be detrimental to sleep at nighttime. So it's a fine balance, but you just want to strategize appropriately so that you're still getting the foundational sleep that you need at night.
And there you have it, everybody. Sleep, our number one performance priority without question. And Sherry Ma, just a dynamite conversation right there. If you want to get that full podcast, go back to our website, crushperformance.com. Click on the podcast button and look back to September 30th. And the podcasts are available on iTunes, now Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, SoundCloud, and more. So it is everywhere and accessible. Hey, when we come back from this break, we're going to go back to my birthday in October and a fantastic conversation we had with the coach of champions, our good friend Jim Fannin, about his new book, Blueprint. You'll want to hear this. Stick around. Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kerschell, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.
If you have any performance questions, comments, or smart remarks, text Crusher at 101260 and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
And welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Crush and the Con Man here. We're your weekly source for performance information. It is a Crush Performance year in review. And I wanted to go back to a conversation we had on my birthday, October, with our good friend Jim Fannin. As we talked about planning for success, it takes a plan. It's like planning a trip. You need a roadmap. You can read and react once you have your map plotted, but it's very, very difficult to be successful without a plan. He has a new book coming out called Blueprint. It is a plan for success. And we talked about some of the experiences we've had in our careers and with the athletes we've worked with and how we've sort of translated that into how we're helping people today. A really big conversation with Jim Fannin, and here it is. All right, we're joined now by Crush favorite Jim Fannin, the coach of champions. Jim, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Well, the timing couldn't be better. You know, we always appreciate talking to you in the spring as the summer sports get underway. But post-Masters, boy, oh, boy, I'm telling you, I've been looking forward to talking to you about this. You've worked with some of the world's greatest golfers, and to see what happened at Augusta, wow, what a great number of storylines.
Well, it is, and I did have a player that I've worked with quite a bit is Thomas Peters. I've been coaching the University of Illinois for about a decade, and they're one of the best programs in the country. Coach of the Year, two NCAA champions, Thomas Peters, one of them, and Mike Smalls, the coach down there at University of Illinois. So I had a chance to work with Thomas quite a bit while he was there, and this guy will wear a green jacket. And he's fearless. He's got a great game, and he's going to make Belgium proud. But we probably should talk about Sergio.
Oh, we have to. Listen, Sergio Garcia, is there maybe, this might be the greatest story in all of sports. Is there a more convincing story of grit and perseverance here? Wow, I'm telling you, this has been a long time coming, and so good for Sergio.
Well, I got to tell you a private story, but I'll go ahead and discuss it. I'm with Sergio midnight in Santorini, Greece, several years ago, at Luke Donald's wedding, and I'm sitting next to him. He's best friends with Luke Donald. I'm coaching Luke Donald, but I'd never met him, and we sit down, late, couple of drinks. It's a wedding, and I turn to him and just blurted out, "Hey, listen, I heard you're the best in the world, tee to green. How come you're not number one?" Pretty blunt question, but it's midnight. It's at a wedding. It's very festive. And he looks at me and he goes, "I don't want to be Tiger Woods." And I said, "Well, you're not African-American. You're not his age. You'll never be Tiger. Why don't you be Sergio? Why don't you want to be number one as you?" And he said, "I don't want the lifestyle."
Wow.
And I was blown away. I really was. I've never had a top player that good, that high a ranking, tell me that. And I'm pretty blunt. In any event, he went on to miss a little four-footer to lose the British, if everyone remembers when that happened. And you know, you can program your subconscious to win. You can program your subconscious to lose. And I think that's what's tripped him up at the majors. So a friend of mine said, "Well, why did he win now?" And I said, "Well, first of all, he choked. So he almost didn't win. He choked a little short putt, and but his life is different. He's engaged now, going to be married, probably have a family. I believe there's a paradigm shift, and I think that paradigm shift relaxed him, settled him down. He was as calm as I've seen him, even though he did push that putt on 18. Went on to play an amazing playoff, and he definitely deserved it. And what a battle. I know Justin Rose as well. I know he's disappointed. He could have easily have won that and be wearing the green jacket. But, you know, Sergio's just somebody you root for. You want to win. I wanted him to win. And will he ever be number one? I don't think so. Will he win another green jacket? I think he might. I think he's not done winning a major, but to be number one, that's a commitment. That's an everyday pressure cooker thing. Winning it get to the top of the mountain is one thing. Of course, staying there with any duration, well, that's a different deal altogether.
Oh, we're talking with Jim Fannin, the coach of champions. You can check out his great stuff at jimfannin.com. Jim, that's a great story. And, you know, one of the things I heard, you know, as the Masters wrapped up was something very similar. I've heard comments from the commentators and people who have been around Sergio that in the past, you know, he had the mindset, oh, I just can't win at Augusta. I just can't win at Augusta. Isn't it incredibly telling, the power of the mind, when we look at golf? I don't know if there's a sport that really requires the blend of physical and mental coming together to create outcomes. But, boy, the power of the mind and that story you just said, I think, really speaks volumes.
Well, you know, if we could see the printout of the internal dialogue of every player, and this is not just in golf, if you could see that printout before the tournament started, you would easily, and this is someone that's not in the business of peak performance, anyone could read that dialogue and go, oh, he's not going to win.
Right.
He's got no chance.
Sure.
The way that he talks to himself internally, his thoughts. So you are what you think. If you believe that you're going to struggle at the Masters, you're right. You're going to struggle at the Masters. If you believe that track's not suited for you, you're right. You're going to lose. So that positive internal dialogue, and this is for everybody listening, you're only as good as what you think, and what you think repetitively, and you're only as good as what you think, especially when you're alone. That really is the big reveal, and this works for teams as well. You know, you have the amount of people on a hockey team. I'd like to see the printout of everybody on that hockey team on how they, you know, on how they prepare, and that's also going to reveal who's going to be there in crunch time and who's not.
And Jim, that's a trainable trait, right? You had a chance. Let's face it. You've had a chance, and you've worked with many, many top performers. But you've worked with the number one golfer in the world, and Luke Donald. You work with great Hall of Famers and great competitors like Frank Thomas. Maybe give us a little insight into where those competitors were at when you first started with them and how their mindset and their attitude changed over your time with them, you know, in terms of you know, their approach to their game and how it impacted the outcomes.
Well, Luke and Luke Donald and Frank Thomas were on the opposite spectrums of what they believed when I first met them. When I first met Frank, I said, well, son, what do you want? Why am I here? What's the point? You know, what's the point of our meeting? And he looked me dead in the eye, and he said with no hesitation, Hall of Fame. And I internally, I'm like, whoa, that's... And he was dead serious.
Right.
You know, I went on to tell him, I said, well, you're going to have to sacrifice. It's going to cost a lot. He thought he was talking about my fee. And I said, no, my fee's going to be chump change how much money you're going to make. my fee's nothing. But you're going to have to sacrifice family, friends, other things to make that commitment. Frank did that, and obviously he's in the Hall of Fame. On the other hand, when I asked Luke that question, he goes, well, I don't know, top 50. Now, this was an NCAA champion, great talent, and I go, top 50? I said, that's it? That's why we're here? I said, I've already done that. That doesn't motivate me. And he looks at me like, wait a minute, what's it? This isn't about you, this is about me. And but it took him a year to start thinking number one. And then one thing clicked for him. He had not won a 72-hole event ever. And we're going to the Honda Classic. And before we got there, I said, if you're the low round in a PGA event that day, are you the best player in the world that day? And he thought a minute, and he goes, wow, I hadn't thought about it, but yeah, I guess I am the best player in the world that day. And I said, well, let's don't try to be number one in the world. Let's just be number one in the world that day. And that was our plan going in, the thinking to the Honda. I'm the best player in the world today, period. And he was comfortable with that.
Wow.
And that's how he won the Honda.
Fantastic story. We're talking with Jim Fannin, coach of champions. That is a great story of mindset. And I guess if you look at Frank Thomas, the difference between Frank Thomas and Luke Donald, very different approaches, but there is an approach for everybody depending on their mindset, their personality, their makeup, Jim. Does that sound about right?
There really is, and even more importantly, their experiences, their history. You know, some people, and I'm going through that right now. I can't reveal any names, but there's someone I'm coaching right now. I'm not even going to reveal the sport. Best in the world talent. There's no question in my mind. But he was never good enough as a child.
Hmm.
Never good enough. And he was constantly worried and that he couldn't do it. Never, and that came from parenting. And I'm helping him overcome that mindset that I'm not good enough. I don't deserve it. And I've had many athletes say, if I don't strike the ball great, I don't deserve to win. And I'm like, I had tennis players do that. John Lloyd was one of them, a great player for England. He felt if he didn't hit the ball well enough in tennis, he didn't deserve to win. And, you know, it took convincing that the best in the world are not on their game, and they still win that day. The best hockey team in the world in a series, there's going to be one game where things don't click, where there's penalties, there might be an injury, something, a little bad luck. That's the game you got to win, and that's the one the champion wins. When Charles Howell won his first tournament, he came out of Oklahoma as Camp Miss, NCAA champion, immediately going to take over Tiger Woods. And he felt the same way. If he wasn't striking the ball well, he didn't deserve to win, and he couldn't win. And when he won his first tournament, he won the Michelob, he told me, he said, I'm shocked that I won. It's the worst I've ever hit the ball. And he realized that in most sports, you don't win. You position yourself with tactics and strategy to get the opponent to lose.
Huh.
Most matches, most games, somebody lost, not necessarily just played amazing and won. And that's really my approach. Let them lose. Just hit your high daily standard. We're not out here trying. In fact, I just have disdain for the word try. T-R-Y. To ruin yourself. To ruin yourself. Try. The kids that are trying too hard, you'll notice they're looking in the stands at mom and dad, and then they try. Because parents say all the time, you got to try harder. Well, to try harder, I have to show you I'm trying harder. So I'll grimace my face, and I'll show you the look of trying. Of course, the best in the world, when they're winning, they look effortless. They're so relaxed, so smooth. They look like they're not trying. And that's really the difference between the good ones, the great ones, and also the difference of people that just don't make it, but they do have the talent.
Wow, we're talking with Jim Fannin, the number one coach of champions. You can check out Jim's information at jimfannin.com. Jim, this is one of the most powerful conversations I think you and I have ever had. I'm telling you right now, I think everybody who is a parent, teacher, coach, and athlete needs to hear this conversation. I tell you what, I'm very intrigued by this. Hey, if we were to go back to Frank Thomas, Frank Thomas came into your world with an unbeatable attitude. Now, there's no question he faced adversity. You mentioned something that was very interesting. Experience really, really does play a role in your overall makeup. Frank obviously had a great makeup, but to overcome some of the challenges he came through, that's a practiced art as well.
It really is, and it's a belief in yourself, internal belief. You know, if you have a child that you're raising right now, if you will, as they go to sleep, they drift off into a REM, R-E-M, REM deep sleep, rapid eye movement deep sleep. About 30 minutes prior to that, the four most powerful words, you can say to your kid, I believe in you. Whisper this. Add silence between the words. When you add silence between any words, retention and listening improves 30 to 40% if you have a little pause. So the last 30 minutes, you've got an 8-year-old, your son, and you go into the room and you kind of rub his hair a little bit. You make a physical contact. He's drifting off to sleep, and you lower your voice. I believe in you. Now, what happens from someone that they love, someone that they respect and believe in, you, the parent, that message is going to be replayed 15 to 20 times while your son is asleep. And they'll wake up with more self-esteem. Now, my only caution is do not do this every night. It will lose a little steam, if you will. But I would judiciously sprinkle it 2-3 times a week. Now, my daughter's 32. She believed, in her mind, she believes that I said that to her every single night. I did not. She believes it, though. It was that powerful for her. And she's an extremely confident trauma center nurse in Manhattan. And believe me, her confidence really came from just slowly building her self-esteem. And she did not have a high self-esteem. I'm not even sure why, early on. But we worked on it, and it definitely improved. And, she's confident. She's that confident person today.
Jim Fannin. Boy, oh boy, I'm telling you right now, I am ready, first of all, to take on the world. And I was ready to take on the world before I got here, for crying out loud.
You're in the zone. I like it.
Yeah. Listen, I'm telling you right now, you bring up a very interesting concept for me. How important are the people around you, Jim? Look what you're just saying, you know, and you know, we can sort of coach and mentor the people around us, but having good people around you, you know, earlier in the conversation, you mentioned some changes in Sergio's life, you know, a real stable partner, getting married, some, you know, I guess, real foundation he can work off. We look at the other side of that spectrum, you know, somebody that he did not want to be. You look at Tiger Woods with that, you know, all the, I guess, distractions that entered his life that maybe impacted his performance. You know, but having these people around you that can influence you in the right way every day, that's putting together a performance team. And in business life, you know, the family life, or even, you know, in your sport performance team, this is a real, real important concept.
Well, it is. I believe there's, you know, there's no more than 10 people, and it's probably more like 3 to 5 people in your life that has helped you become who you are. It's helped you in your self-discipline, your concentration, your optimism, your ability to relax, especially in a chaotic or a situation or a crisis, but also the ability to laugh and to enjoy life. And these are the 5 components of my score system: self-discipline, concentration, optimism, relaxation, and enjoyment. We all have those 5 components. Some of us have more, some of us have less. If you think about it, it spells a word. Optimism is really in the center of the word, but in the center of these components, and we all have them. These five components trigger chemicals: cortisol, glycogen, adrenaline, dopamine, serotonin, endorphins. All of these chemicals really make up your overall performance. The zone, that peak performance state, is chemically induced naturally by the body. Well, all of those things are influenced by the people around you. And, you know, sometimes you got to be tough. Parents need to be tough. Stick to it. But if you look at the champions, they've had a consistent, for a long time, thought process and a consistency about themselves. And some parents unwittingly, who are constantly, you're not good enough, you can do better, you got to try, all those things, eventually they will have a lower self-esteem. And self-esteem is what you think other people think about you. Now the champion, he's not concerned what you think about him or her, because he's convinced that he can execute the basics at the right time and place, and he knows that's good enough to win, that I don't have to be perfect to win. And again, a lot of kids, they believe they have to be perfect to win because they've had so much negative criticism, and they have a lower self-esteem. They try too hard, and that causes them to lose. I see it all the time. Go watch a tennis match. Go watch any golf match with juniors. They're looking to the parents, and the parents are throwing their hands up. They're grimacing. They're mouthing words, you know, because they don't want to necessarily be heard. Hockey's a little different. They don't care if they're heard. You know, you can yell and scream. And really, nothing is more important than the self-esteem of your kid. Nothing. That's right. The biggest asset, and that's the asset that needs to be invested fully. And mom and dad, I hold mom and dad responsible for that.
Mom and dad, the parents, the coaches, the teachers, the influencers, and Jim, these relationships, they're not just a passive relationship. These are active, you know, interactions. It's not always smooth, but relationships are something you have to build, you have to control, and even direct at times, correct?
You know, I can look at my own life. I was raised on a dirt floor, an outhouse to go to the bathroom, no running water, no electricity. Hey, mommy, are we poor? You hungry? No, ma'am. Then you're not poor.
Hmm.
Okay. It was a state of mind. And she said to me that she believed in me when I went to sleep at night. And then, you know, later on at 11, age 11, I met a mentor, Professor R.W. Ross, 83-year-old philosophy professor, retired now, running a little tennis program. And he taught me how to visualize. And he gave me even more confidence. So there's probably five people in your life that has helped you be on the course that you're on right now. And that, you know, finding the right wife or husband, that's crucial. That's the person that you sleep with every night. And what you say during the night, you know, before you go to sleep, has an impact on your whole life. That person needs to be chosen very, very wisely. So, and when it comes to coaches, parents, we need to not just take them to the so-called best coach. It's going to be the best coach for your son or daughter. That's different. That's different. So, you know, a coach is not for everybody. Find the coach that's the best for your kid, the person that's going to give your son or daughter the most self-esteem. And that doesn't mean we're coddling them and protecting them. You know, I'm blunt with young players, but they want to know, they don't mind that, but they also want to know what they do well. And I think we need to accentuate the strengths. I know before, if I'm coaching any athlete the day before a big event, we're working on what they do well, not what they don't do well. Everybody else is scrambling to take lessons and work on your weaknesses. And, you know, just for all the majors, work on your strengths the day before and have a coach and have parents encourage that those are strong. You do that really well. That's how you want to go into a big event. You can't fix a weakness in one day, so why dwell on it?
Oh, just so good. It's always great when Jim Fannin comes on. We really don't know where these conversations are going to go, but they always turn out better than I ever expected, and this is no exception. If you want to go back and get that full podcast, go to our website, crushperformance.com, hit the podcast button, and go back to October. It was right on my birthday, mid-October there, and it's worthy of a listen and a share with your friends, family, and even teammates. Hey, when we come back, we'll wrap up the Crush Performance 2017 year in review. Some more great conversations coming up right after this.
Radio Influence brings you the absolute best in digital audio broadcasting. We've got something for everyone. Sports personalities like the Fabulous Sports Babe, Rich Herrera, and former Major League Baseball manager Kevin Kennedy as they take you inside the dugout. We'll take you inside the world of MMA with the MMA Report with Jason Floyd, the MMA Insiders, and the Valor Hour with Tim Loy and Casey Oxendine. Or you could find yourself sitting ringside with wrestling ring announcer David Penn. TV law enforcement analyst and former police officer Vincent Hill breaks down this week's biggest crime stories and takes you beyond the badge. Chef Brian Duffy from TV's Bar Rescue shares his crazy life on the road with Duffified Live. And Scott Ledger will always make you think with some dangerous conversation. All of Radio Influence's shows can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Crush Performance. Crushing the Con Man here, and a quick wrap-up right now to our 2017 Crush Performance Year in Review. I wanted to take a moment here to thank all of our great guests from 2017. It was a really blockbuster year, from the Crush War on Sugar to the conversations on coaching, doping in sport, and battling the dark side. And how can we tap into your potential? That is our ultimate goal, helping people understand what it takes to be great, because it's so, so doable. So if you're an athlete, parent, coach, if you're a teacher, manager, business owner, this show is for you, because what we're trying to do is look at the landscape of human performance and looking at the new strategies, the new ways of thinking to help you reach your potential. And 2017 has been an exceptional year for that indeed. So as I thank all of our great guests, I also want to thank our incredible audience for all the feedback, participation, the podcast, in the blogs, in the newsletters, the emails. A really, really overwhelming response this year, and it's much, much appreciated as I try to tie into social media. It's not easy, but I'm slowly learning the way there. And of course, Crush Performance would not be possible without our incredible, long-standing sponsors and partners. Sherwood Park Dodge Chrysler Jeep, Spectrum Rental, United Cycle, the Glen Sather Sports Medicine Clinic, Marmot Basin, and the Best Western Jasper Inn and Suites. All of these great partners make our show possible every single week, and we're incredibly grateful for that. 2018, everyone, it is going to be a blockbuster year for Crush Performance. As the Crush War on Sugar will continue, we kick the year off with a fantastic series on corruption in sport as we try to get an understanding of what's going wrong out there, what can we do to set the record straight, and how can we create an environment where the integrity of sport rules the way. So all the very best to you and your family this holiday season, and we'll look forward to talking with you in 2018. From everybody here at Crush Performance, happy holidays.
Goodbye now. Don't forget to ride.
This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
We've had a good interaction with some fans talking about paying student athletes, and we've had a really good emailer that has put forth some well-thought ideas and questions in relation to Tuesday's podcast, and how we look at the whole process of paying athletes and the money that's available to it. And he brings up some good points that I want to address for him and for the other listeners out there. And he talks a little bit about the importance of players, and the games wouldn't happen without the players. And that's absolutely true. Of course, they wouldn't happen without the universities that they represent as well. Certainly, I do believe that there needs to be an increase in the stipend But I think that there's some other things that I neglected to bring up and didn't do a very good job in the last podcast of going into as much detail as I have in the past. So I want to take the time to kind of go over it again and talk about the things that I think could be improved as far as making the student athletes' time on campus more comfortable. I believe that they provide a service and they work for the university. And in addition to their scholarship, I think what they do brings enough attention to the university and enough positive vibe and marketing to the university that it should provide not only a scholarship, which is worth an awful lot, but it should also provide them more money to be able to live comfortably. I don't believe they should be paid and should be paid money for their services, but I think the stipend should be equal. And I also believe, and I've said this before in the past, it was about 3 or 4 years ago when I spent some time going over this, and I do believe that for players, the particularly ones that have great marketing abilities with their skills, I do believe that taking a fund that is generated from likeness of players should be put in the fund and split three ways. One, to the school. Without the school, you don't have anything that you're representing. Two, I think it should go into a fund to help student athletes who are struggling with medical issues as a result of being involved with student activity playing. We talk about it a lot at the NFL level, but we don't talk about it enough at the college level. So I think money should be put into a fund there. And I think there is a fund that should be put for the player upon their graduation at the school. And I think that it could be worked to where the longer you stay at the school, the more money you receive. I think coming in for the one-and-done basketball guys or the redshirt sophomores in college football that leave early, you get less money because you didn't stay there longer. I think that's only fair. You stay there full 4 years, you get more money. Money that's put in and invested for you for your future. I think those things are on top of what I mentioned the other day in terms of making sure that all of their clothing and housing needs are very well taken care of. In addition, obviously, to the best nutrition. If we're going to develop these players as coaches, we certainly need to do the best in terms of the nutrition in areas.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.